We in Las Vegas are prone to say that we have created something unique, a destination resort that grew out of gambling. We did, after all, invent the mega resort and the whole idea of an adult Disneyland. And of course, Reno has been struggling forever. But in his new book, Reno, Las Vegas, and the Strip, A Tale of Three Cities, UNLV historian Eugene Mooring has a different take. We have a link to the book at our website, knprnews.org, and Eugene Mooring will be speaking about these issues Wednesday evening at UNLV. And he joins us now. Gene Martin, welcome back to KNPR.
Well, thanks. It's nice to be here.
I'm doing the math here. I see Reno, Vegas, and the Strip, and you call it A Tale of Three Cities.
Yes.
Why is the Strip a city unto
itself?
Well,
the Strip began as just an appendage to Las Vegas, really beyond the city line at Sahara Avenue in the 1940s. But by the 1950s and certainly by the 60s and 70s, it had become a city in its own. I mean, all those hotels, that incredible job zone that was created out there, spawned its own subdivisions, its shopping centers, and eventually the county commissioners, who had really relatively little power in the 1920s, 30s, 40s, became more powerful in some ways than the city councils in Las Vegas and the other cities surrounding us.
Okay, so is Las Vegas itself effectively competing with the Strip?
Well, Las Vegas was competing with the Strip, not so much in the 1940s, but by the mid-1950s and 60s, absolutely, and being outstripped by the Strip. Literally, the mother city spawned a city that was bigger than itself. And today, I mean, the city of Las Vegas still is a reasonably sized city. It is the county seat. It has the administrative and government offices mostly. But the real city of our metropolitan area is in the center, and it's run by the county commissioners.
And this is something a lot of us, even those of us who've lived here for a few years, aren't fully aware of that. It's what? You drive south of Sahara on Las Vegas Boulevard.
Once you're south of Sahara Avenue, you're no longer in the city of Las Vegas. You're in the
Vegas
county. Yeah, and the county commissioners, if people would know, in the last 20, 25 years, create the CAT bus system with bond issues, Bruce Woodbury's Beltway, the Desert and Arterial, the airport effectively once at Nellis, and once the first airport being right between the Sahara and the old Las Vegas Hilton. But the airport ends up on Paradise Road in the county. The county commissioners are the airport commissioners who helped to build it, which is not the case in Reno. And widening of the Strip to allow mega resorts, public works, sewers, and all of that, all done by the county commissioners. And a lot of the planning, county commissioners. Flood control district, after the floods of the 1980s, run by the county commissioners. So the county commissioners wield much more power today than the city commissioners did. Of course, the city tried to annex the Strip on three different occasions and failed, 1946, 51, and then again in 1978.
And you mentioned Reno. I want to swing to Reno for a little bit. You argue that in some ways Reno invented the gambling-based tourist economy and Las Vegas just followed.
Well, Reno did. Reno was the major city in the state, and Las Vegas did not pass Reno in population, well, officially 1960 census, but actually 1953. And Reno actually provided the model that Las Vegas followed. Hoover Dam launched us. We were a railroad town in the beginning, like Reno. But Reno's the one that really developed the divorce industry. The larger casinos were in Reno for many years. And the city of Las Vegas first, and then the Strip, eventually copied the model and went beyond it.
Now, historians of the gambling industry usually say that the big change came when corporations were licensed to own casinos. What was the difference in that?
Well, there was a 1967 law which allowed that. It was not written very well. It was improved in 1969. And actually, Bill Hara in Reno was the first one to incorporate. But the point is, the corporations have simply more money to build mega resorts. The first mega resorts are not really Caesars Palace and the International. They're really, it's really Steve Wynn's Mirage. That's when the real mega resorts began. Steve Wynn made a statement in the 1970s or 80s at a meeting in which he said, "I think the hotels in Las Vegas are too small." And nobody quite understood what he meant, because the MGM, today Bally's, the first MGM, 1973, was a fairly large building, as was Caesars Palace, which has expanded over the years. But he had the Mirage in his head, his wife once told me, when he lived in Florida, when he was in Miami. And the dream finally came true. He got enough land north of Caesar's Palace to build the Mirage and open it in 1989. From that point on, that was the real revolution that made the Strip a major city.
The downtown casinos, in the meantime, did not go to corporate ownership. They tended to stay in the hands of families that owned land downtown, or families like the Binions. Did that hurt downtown development?
Well, I think so. I mean, Steve did own the Golden Nugget for a while, and he had to close a street to make the thing twice as big. The problem with gambling in a city like Reno and Las Vegas had was they need space. I mean, that was fine in the 19th century when you needed a small place with a few slot machines near the stagecoach station or the railroad station. But in the 20th century, you need lots of space for big showrooms and shopping arcades and things like that. And that's where the county had the land along the old Los Angeles Highway.
Would we have a different history of Las Vegas in place if those families had sold properties to the Harrah's or the Boyd's or others?
They still would have had to get more land mm-hmm. to build larger hotels. And the problem is this: a city, a downtown area, is not the greatest place for gambling to sprout. Yeah. Really, the Strip proved that you're better off in lands where you get 35, 40-acre tracks and build. And that's what they're doing in Macau now. They have pods for where they're going to build new casinos. And the Strip is really more the model than, let's say, Biloxi or Las Vegas or Reno.
You'd said that the tipping point year when Las Vegas became larger than Reno was about 1953. When did the Strip overtake both of those cities?
Certainly by the 1970s, might have been earlier, but it was exploded. And that was certainly after 1970. Well, Spring Valley begins in the mid-1970s. And from that point on, the Strip simply, as each new hotel room went up, was a multiplier of five jobs, they told me at the Chamber of Commerce around 1978. And how many hotel rooms did we build on the Strip in the 1970s, 80s, and 90s? And you're multiplying by five jobs. Those people have to live someplace, they have to shop someplace, and they're not going to go down to Fremont Street to do it.
The usual story, maybe the sort of apocryphal history, is that the entrepreneurs from the mob days forward wanted the freedom to develop without the restraint of city government. What was in that? Why was Clark County government so friendly to casino owners on the Strip?
Well, because it wanted to expand its tax base. Uh-huh. As John Kalin of the Review Journal once told me, no one's going to kill the goose that laid the golden egg. In Reno, and I make a big point of this in the book, the people in Reno were not too happy with casino gambling expanding. Reno voters had a totally different view from even the city of Las Vegas voters. But the people in the Strip city owed their existence to the Strip. And that was the friendliest place for places to expand and not face tough zoning laws. The city of Las Vegas zoning laws were much tougher than Clark County's. And also, the police force in the 50s was more corrupt than Clark County's. I mean, Ralph Lamb would throw a mobster out of town if he had to. But the fact was, the mob, when they owned the casinos, really didn't trust the city police department. They didn't know what they were going to be doing next. And they preferred to be in the county under people like Ralph Lamb.
We're talking with Gene Mooring, UNLV historian. His new book is called Reno, Las Vegas, and the Strip, A Tale of Three Cities. He speaks about the book and about some of the issues raised in the book Wednesday night at UNLV. We've got information at knprnews.org. You know, I know that there's a lot of entrepreneurial activity along East Fremont Street, the Arts District downtown, headquarters of Zappos and such. Could that really have developed differently than the way it did?
I doubt it. I still think the problem was, even in 1905, there wasn't enough land to build a resort hotel. You have to realize that casino gambling had always been downtown near the railroad station or the Stagecoach station. But what happened is Thomas Hull, when he built the El Rancho Vegas, what he did was he took gambling from the narrow confines of city lots and put it in a resort hotel. That was the magic. It was no longer in just a hotel or a bar. It was in a resort hotel where you could have a much larger showroom, a much larger casino, which it turns out modern gamblers, post-World War II gamblers, really want, plus all the shopping and all the gourmet rooms, not just a coffee shop and a buffet. And you can only do that on a larger plot of land, which the county had and the city didn't have. There were enough houses interspersed all the way down to Sahara Avenue and in the different streets that there was no way you could buy a big tract of land. Again, Steve Wynn was able to convince the city to close the street and give him the plot of land behind the Golden Nugget for more room for a parking garage, but that was unusual. The city probably would have had to reconfigure its land grid in order to compete with the Strip effectively.
Is the land issue alone a primary reason for the decline
in
downtown?
Yes, it is. Both Reno and Las Vegas had problems with all kinds of people owning parcels of land. It wasn't just one big person who could just sell the land and it would be okay. There were numerous owners of land, even within what would today be casinos downtown. It wasn't that whole square that they have, maybe, perhaps, let's say, at the Horseshoe, didn't exist. I mean, there were multiple owners. And both cities faced that problem because land ownership is very intense downtown.
And the cities couldn't really do anything about that.
No, they couldn't. And and everyone wanted to hold out for the highest price, and they wouldn't agree to sell. And, of course, once all the people with parcels sold and there was one guy left, he'd hold out in both cities. And that wasn't a problem in the county.
And today, Reno is also facing competition from Indian casinos in California. They're a little closer than they are to Las Vegas. What have they done to combat that problem?
There's not much they can do to combat that problem. In fact, Lake Tahoe's facing the same problem. Californians can't see why they should cross the Donner Summit in the middle of January when they can go to east of Sacramento and gamble right there. Reno has lost 12 hotels in the last 25 years. It's an implosion almost. And fortunately, they've been able to diversify their economy. Apple is moving there.
Yeah,
Apple put their iCloud center there, and that's going to help. But the people of Reno, even in the 60s and 70s, didn't want the MGM. There was tremendous opposition to MGM and Circus going there. And quite frankly, they want to look like other American towns. They don't want to look like that line of clubs in Frank Capra's famous movie, It's a Wonderful Life. Mm. You might remember that.
Yeah,
they want to look like, you know, other cities where it's churches and office buildings and...
Are they going to have a lot of choice in that matter?
Oh, they don't have any choice in
that
matter.
Yeah, I mean, they're in Nevada, after all.
Right now, they are no longer in their managed growth mode like they were in the 70s, 80s, and 90s. They are looking to try to diversify the economy aggressively. They need to broaden that tax base up there.
Yeah, if they get the Tesla battery plant, does that
certainly will help.
It'll help the game.
I mean, Apple and Tesla alone is going to bring other things. And if you're familiar with Boise, they got Micron and Compaq and a couple of other companies to move in. And eventually they had over 1,000 small computer companies in that old potato town of Boise. Hmm. And Boise has been just as important to Reno as Phoenix has been to Vegas and saying, this is where we need to go next.
Whatever Las Vegas' strengths may be, the lesson from the Great Recession seems to be that this city's got to diversify and get away a little bit from gambling, because that doesn't stand up well in a downturn. Why has Las Vegas ultimately struggled so much to diversify its economy?
Well, it is diversifying now. Switch is a major event for us. And a lot of the major companies in America now are storing a lot of their data right at Switch, which is, again, in the Strip City. It's not in Las Vegas necessarily, although they have various locations in the county. And they're getting some biomedical research. The whole push to give UNLV a medical school is very much patterned on what's been happening at ASU and the relationship between Tucson and Phoenix, which very often resembles the relationship between Las Vegas and Reno, the north-south split. Because, you know, for years, Tucson did not want Phoenix to have ASU, and that was a battle just like Reno and UNLV. But I think that we are succeeding, and I think that the governor, Sandoval himself, has reorganized the way the state puts together recruitment money and has learned a lot from Texas and Utah, especially, in how to recruit new industry.
Now, the economic development experts would say, well, there's a great inbuilt advantage with lower taxes. Has that really helped?
The problem we face is not so much lower taxes, although it's helpful. Companies like that, but you know, a lot of big companies are in California where the taxes are sky high. The problem is education. We've not been famous for our schools being wonderful, and even today we're not pumping very much money into it. There's a lot of opposition to the business margins tax, but nobody comes up with alternatives. But the fact of the matter is we need to do a better job of not only of graduating people out of our high schools, but also getting more of Las Vegas to get college degrees. We have one of the lowest per capita rates of that in the country.
A few days ago, all the TV stations were doing the newscasts from the opening of the SLS Las Vegas, talk of new resorts at the north end of the Strip, new Crown and Genting Hotel casinos on the way, things like that. Are we falling back into the old reliance on big strip casinos to drive growth?
Well, I think we're always going to have our major sector as resort tourism. I mean, it's going to be a long time before this city, the metropolitan area, is relying on other industries more than hotels. It is important for us to continue to grow, but the point is that our growth rate is going to be never what it was in the 1980s and 90s, and someday it's going to peter out because other states, we've had the nationalization of gambling and, you know, it's and even the internet and Indian casinos. Indian casinos are no threat to Las Vegas, but, I mean, you can't continue growing at a 20-25% rate forever. It is important, though, that the North Strip develop. I mean, we've had a lot of action in the South Strip in the 90s, the Center Strip with Steve Wynn and Sheldon Adelson, and now the North Strip has room to grow, and it needs to grow. That new hotel with the Great Wall of China and all that's going to be helpful. It might even help the Fontainebleau finish. The action's going to be more on the North Strip, and we do have to flesh that part of the economy out. But at the same time, we have to diversify.
You've looked at these three cities you describe in the book. Which one do you think has come out the real winner?
Well, the Strip City's come out as the real winner.
Yeah,
Reno is struggling. The whole redevelopment of downtown in both Las Vegas and in Reno have been very helpful, and they're still in process. There's still a long way to go. You drive out Fremont Street to pass 5th and 6th, and there's not much as you drive towards Maryland Parkway. They have a long way to go there. But hopefully the new downtown, by buying the Union Pacific Railroad yards, Las Vegas got a chance to really double the size of its downtown, and it's important what they put on that canvas. Will it be a soccer stadium? Will it be high-end condominiums and gourmet restaurants? It's hard to say. The problem they face, of course, is that just like Reno had the railroad tracks, Las Vegas has Union Plaza right in the middle of Fremont Street. If they were able to move that back and have Fremont Street run right into the new part of downtown, it probably would be a little bit better. But that is what it is. The footprints down, and so we'll see what happens.
UNLV historian Gene Mooring has a new book out this month, Reno, Las Vegas, and the Strip, A Tale of Three Cities. He will talk about his research in detail this coming Wednesday. We've got details about both the book and the lecture at knprnews.org. Gene Mooring, many thanks for joining us.
Thank you very much.